I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Tonight's video is about a state policeman and a group of volunteers who go out as a search party looking for this missing teenage girl in the middle of the woods. And what they encounter will leave you questioning everything. Stay tuned. If you're new to the channel, subscribe. Click on that bell and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now let's get spooky. State Police Captain James T. McNeil got out of his brown department blazer and walked over to the men standing around the trailhead. There were a dozen of them, 3 troopers, 2 local deputies, representing a full half of Sonoya's police force, and 6 civilians in plaid shirts, jeans, and orange hats. A few of them carried hunting rifles. All of them wore guns on their hips. McNeil didn't know any of them, but he assumed they were locals rounded up by Sheriff Hogan from the town diner and deputized. He wasn't fond of civilian posses, but he couldn't afford to be picky. Sarah Martin had already been missing 24 hours. If they had any chance of finding her alive and unharmed, they had to act now. And with the anti-Trump protests in Martinsburg, the county seat, cops were hard to come by. "All right, here's the plan," McNeil said, bringing the group to attention. "We're going to split up into teams of 3. Deputy Harnett, I want you to move northwest." Bill Harnett, a short man with a mustache, nodded. "Deputy Blake, I want you to move northeast." Joshua Blake, tall and boyish, nodded. "Winston, you stay here and man the radio." Trooper George Winston blinked his acknowledgement. "I'm going to go north along the trail. You and you follow." He pointed the 2 men. An old geezer in an orange vest and a boy who couldn't be more than 17. Pops carried a rifle. Junior had a Colt Woodsman at his hip. McNeil trusted them the least. Pops could have a heart attack and keel any minute. Junior was liable to try to get his gun out and blast his own dick off. McNeil felt better keeping an eye on them himself. "Keep your radios on channel 3, McNeil said. "And keep that line clear for emergencies, all right?" The men all nodded and muttered that they understood. "Let's move." McNeil entered the forest first, Pops and Junior bringing up the rear. It was hot, a still August day. The bright summer sun filtered through the treetops and made pools of light on the forest floor. Insects buzzed in the underbrush. "Blake," McNeil said, gesturing northeast with his radio. Blake's group broke off and started heading in that direction. "Harnett," McNeil said, pointing northwest. Harnett led his men that way, and tangled forest quickly swallowing them. McNeil could see neither team now, but he could hear them rustling in the bush. The path, which began on US 220 north of Moorfield, crossed Mount Clinton, and led out just north of Franklin. 25 miles north was wide and smooth, worn down by generations of hunters, backpackers, and nature lovers. Up ahead, it turned around a bend, dipped, and then began climbing again. On the trek up, Pop started panting. "You all right, old-timer?" McNeil asked, glancing over his shoulder.
"I'm fine," Pops replied between bursts of breath. "Just gotta get the blood flowing."
"You be careful with that," McNeil said. "Too much blood flowing and your heart's gonna burst." Wouldn't be the first time,
Pop said in rasped laughter. By this point, McNeil couldn't hear the others. He stopped and took a moment to get his bearings. Sarah Martin, 17 and a cheerleader at Keyser High School, had been hiking with a few friends the previous afternoon when they became separated. They eventually found their way back to the car and waited, but Sarah never showed. Like the dumb kids they were, they left, and when they got back to an area with cell service, they called Sarah's parents. By the time the police were involved, it was too dark to start looking. The last place Sarah was seen was an overlook called Coffin Rock, about 2 miles in. McNeil didn't know it personally, but earlier, studying a map laid out on the Blazer's hood, he saw that it was just off the main path. He didn't imagine the Martin girl could have gotten too far away from it. Though you could never be sure. He remembered the case of a girl from Maine who just got lost in the woods back in 98 or 99. When they found her, she was halfway through Vermont. You know a place called Coffin Rock? McNeil asked.
Sure do, Pop said. That's where they used to go when they were feeling frisky.
Lovely. It's just up ahead, isn't it?
Pretty much. There's another path that leads up to it, about a half mile maybe. It's kind of steep.
All right. Back underway, they followed the path for another quarter mile before it crossed a rocky creek via an old wooden bridge. Names, hearts, and cuss words covered the railings. Carved Sharpies. JD plus MH 79. F. Wayne. Black Power.
You ever heard about the Mountain Man?
Pops huffed. What's that? McNeil asked.
The Mountain Man. Everyone knows him, right, Ben?
Yeah, the boy muttered. Not me, McNeil said far away. The terrain flanking the path was getting steeper and more rugged. Pops wasn't going to make it.
Well, you're not from around here, are you?
McNeil shook his head. Beckley. The old man laughed.
Well, the Mountain Man is kind of like, I don't know, he protects mountain folk.
From what? McNeil asked absently. A branch had fallen across the path. He scuffed it up and tossed it aside, where one end splashed into the creek.
From bad people,
Pop said, as if it should be evident.
He lives in a cave somewhere, and whenever mountain people need him, he comes to help.
Interesting, McNeil said.
Yep, he's like a guardian angel. Maybe he got her and he's keeping her safe, doing our work for us.
He laughed. Maybe. How much farther to Coffin Rock?
Oh, about a mile.
As they approached the second path, something watched them from the underbrush. Sarah Martin came groggily awake, her head woozy and her mouth dry. She tried to move. Her pain washed over her. Her arms were sore, her back ached. A hot ball of agony burned in the middle of her skull. She opened her eyes. She was facing a bare concrete wall crisscrossed with cracks and splotches with water stains. She tried to move her arms, but found that they were bound. Her heart began racing. Desperately, she tried to remember where she was and how she had come to be there. Her mind moved slowly, muddily. Slowly, it began coming back to her piece by piece. She was hiking with Cindy and Robin, and somehow they got split up. She made her way back to Coffin Rock, where she sat to catch her breath and enjoy the sweeping view of the valley below. Suddenly, darkness stole over her.
Apúrate que se acaban las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's. Ahora hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. Y como la Navidad ya se siente, ahorra $4 en luces LED de 100 bombillas en hilera GE. Ahora solo $5.98. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos, tú ahorras. Válido hasta 12-3, selección varía por tienda, solo en tiendas selectas, hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en Lowe's.com.
For a time, the world was blackness. Faded, loopy half-memories came to her, being dragged and then carried. A cabin nested in the woods, its windows boarded up and its roof caved in. She recalled a pair of rough hands stroking her face. Kidnapped. The word flashed in her mind like a neon sign. Kidnapped. 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 Her heart pounded faster, and she began to hyperventilate. It was only then that she discovered she was gagged. Get a grip, she told herself. Calm down, calm down, calm down. You'll suffocate if you don't. She closed her eyes, bit down on the gag, and tried to regain her composure. She called up happy images. Her parents, her dog, Buster. Her boyfriend Doug waiting for her back at the UWV in Morgantown. She called up visions of her future kids, a nice house on a quiet street, a career in law. When she finally began to settle down, she opened her eyes and looked around. The room, which took to be a basement, was dusty and cast in semi-darkness. A cracked window was below where the wall met the ceiling and was framed in green foliage. She flexed her wrists, zip-tied, then to her feet. They were bound too. Where was she? The cabin? If she really saw it, if she really was dragged or carried, then she was pretty sure she was still in the forest somewhere, maybe miles from the path, maybe feet. She flexed her wrists again. She thought she felt some play. Her wrists were sore. She flexed again, rubbing her wrist together. It hurt like hell, but she was confident that with enough effort, she could slip her bonds. Being still, she listened for any sounds. She heard nothing save for the rustling of the trees and the wind. If her attacker was in the cabin, he was asleep or being still. Maybe he wanted her to get out, so he could pop out from behind a curtain and grab her again. Maybe he was at work. Maybe he had a heart attack and died. She seriously doubted the latter. It was possible that he wasn't there, though, and Sarah hoped to God that she had enough time to get away before he got back. Clenching her eyes closed and groaning against her gag, she flexed and rubbed her wrists together. James T. McNeil put his hands on his hips and scanned the valley below. A veritable sea of trees crowded the windswept slopes. In the valley itself, a steely river flowed north to south like a gray snake. In the distance, a low mountain rose against the dusty blue sky. Like much of Pennsylvania and West Virginia, this area was settled by German immigrants in the 1800s. They were hardy pioneers who worked sun up to sundown and feared God. Standing here, you could be forgiven for believing that civilization simply didn't exist.
See anything?
Pops asked. He was sitting on a rock, his hands clasping on his bony knees. The trek up the second path hadn't been kind to him. McNeil told him to wait, but he insisted. Stubborn old bastard. Nothing, McNeil said, jumping down from the rock which lent the overlook its name. He walked to the edge of the earth, cupping his mouth with his hands and yelling Sarah Martin's name. For a long time, it echoed back and forth through the valley, almost as if it were mocking him. Come on, he said, heading back to the path. She's down there somewhere. Sighing, Pops got to his feet. Ben, who had been kneeling worried next to the old man, got up as well. They descended the path, which was rutted and unkept, and 5 minutes later reached the trail. Just then, the radio on McNeil's hip cracked to life.
Officer McNeil, do you copy?
Yeah, Harnett, McNeil said into the radio. Did you find anything?
Yeah, we did. Not that it's anything to do with Sarah Martin.
McNeil's brow furrowed. What did you find?
A skull.
Pops and Ben looked at each other. A skull?
Yes, sir. Looked like there's a grave here, too.
McNeil's stomach turned. You sure it's not an old cemetery? There's lots of those out here.
Well, I don't know. It could be. Just haven't touched anything.
McNeil nodded. Good. Just mark the location and we'll come back to it. Sarah Martin takes top priority right now.
Will do.
McNeil clipped the radio to his belt. You know any old graveyards out here? He asked Pops. Family plots? Anything like that?
Not particularly, Pops replied after a moment's thought. There have to be some, I reckon.
McNeil nodded. Yeah, that's what I figure. A thought occurred to him then. You don't have many missing persons cases out here, do you? McNeil hadn't heard of any, but he had only been on the Hardy County Barracks for a couple of months after transferring up from Charleston. Even in the remote West Virginia panhandle, there was enough to keep the state police busy without going through every missing persons file and cold case. Pops mulled that over.
Well, there was Tina Anderson a couple months ago. She worked at the high school. You knew her, right, Benny?
Yeah, Benny said. She was a secretary.
Pops nodded.
She up and vanished one day, but no one reported her missing, I think. She's a grown woman, you know?
McNeil nodded thoughtfully. She have family around here?
Ohio, Ben said.
If she was really missing, you'd expect her folks to call about her, Pop said.
McNeil made a note to follow up on that. Right now, however, they needed to find Sarah Martin. The possibility of her being hurt was good. McNeil found himself hoping she was. What with them finding a grave and all, that might be the best eventually. McNeil shook his head. What's the rest of the path like? Any landmarks, buildings, clearings?
There's a couple clearings up ahead, Pops told him. There's a water hole, an old train trestle. Not too much else.
All right, let's go. They followed the trail for another mile before the dense forest on either side fell away, revealing a large grassy field. McNeil was so busy scanning both sides that he didn't realize there was something in the path until he kicked it, stopping. He bent down and picked it up. A gray and pink New Balance sneaker. He turned it over in his hands. It looked warm, like any other shoe, but it also looked fresh. Sarah Martin had been wearing gray and pink tennis shoes. He looked at Pops and then Ben. This is Sarah Martin's. McNeil got to his feet and looked east and west. In the east, he saw nothing, but to the west, he could swear that the grass looked freshly trampled. Here, he said, and handed Pops the shoe. Taking out his gun by instinct, he left the path and walked into the field. Sure enough, a narrow trail had been beaten through the growth by the recent passage of something. Maybe it was a deer. Maybe it was a man. Just 1 hour before, he would have suspected the former. Now he was dreadfully certain that it was the latter. Being careful to forge his own way as to not disturb the original path, McNeil followed it for several hundred feet until it reached the tree line. Pines dotted the slope. Beyond, a dilapidated cabin sat in a grove of trees. Turning, McNeil motioned for Pops and Ben to join him. When they were all together, he nodded to the cabin.
What's the story on this place?
I don't know,
Pop said.
I didn't know it was there.
Really? McNeil asked. You know everything else about this area.
Not everything. You know how many square miles there are out here? I've seen some, but not all.
McNeil turned to Ben. You have any idea? Ben shook his head.
No.
McNeil looked towards the cabin, lost in the shadows. It looked long abandoned, but something deep down told him that Sarah Martin was inside. Maybe she was hurt. Maybe she found it and went inside after nightfall. Or maybe she was in there against her will. Here, McNeil said, handing Pops the radio. I'm going to go check it out. If I'm not back in 5 minutes, call the others, okay?
You're going in there alone?
Ben asked worriedly. We don't have time to waste. She could be hurt in there. Stay out of sight and keep your guns out. Ben nodded. Gun in hand, Ben moved low and quick, from one tree to another. At the last, before the land opened up, he paused and pressed himself against the trunk. He listened for any unnatural sounds, but didn't hear any. Only the wind and the cicadas. Making sure Pops and Ben were out of sight, he moved from the tree and rushed towards the cabin. Its front porch sagged, the roof half caved in. He went up the steps and ducked to one side of the door. With his left hand, he reached over and knocked on the door.
Police, open up.
He waited for a few moments, then tried the doorknob. It was open. Twisting, he rushed in, sweeping the room. It was small, bare save for the ratty old couch from the 70s and assorted rubble. Dust laid heavy over everything. At the end of the short hall were three rooms, one being a bedroom, one being a bathroom, and the other being a kitchen. McNeil checked each of the rooms thoroughly. They were all clean. For a moment, he stood in the middle of the room and looked around. His guts were telling him she was here. He started heading towards the door. That's when he heard it. A muffled but cutting, "Help me," that stopped him cold.
Help me.
He turned. The voice was coming from nowhere.
Help.
Then it struck him. Moving quickly, he moved the couch. A trap door was hidden underneath. He pulled the brass knob and swung it open. A set of stairs descended into the darkness. Shaking, McNeil went halfway down. For a moment, his eyes failed him. But once they became adjusted to the gloom, he saw her huddled in the corner, trembling. She held her hands before her. The wrists were raw and bloody.
Jizo.
Someone hit him in the back of the head, and the world swam away. Sarah screamed at the cop, pitched forward down the stairs and landed with a thud. Behind him, a silhouette against the sunlight, was the man who had taken her. Moving slowly with a flourish, she descended the stairs. When she saw his face, she realized that she knew him. Ben Fraser. When she was a senior at Moorfield High, Ben was a freshman. She had caught him looking at her during lunch, and word got around that he liked her. He never approached her, though. That's two people I wasn't planning on killing today, Ben said, tucking his gun back into his holster. And you got out. Panicking now, Sarah tried to stand, but Ben was on her, grabbing her by the hair and yanking her back. No, 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 he hissed through bared teeth. We can't have that. He lowered her to the floor and straddled her, wrapping his hands around her throat. She clawed at them, digging so deep that she drew blood. Ben winced but tightened his grip.
You're all the same, he said. You all laugh at me and reject me. You, Miss Anderson, Kayla Morgan, and Bible Camp?
The world was starting to go gray. Sarah thrashed and fought, but he was choking the life out of her.
But you'll see. You all see.
just before she went out the cusp of death, a loud thunk filled the day. Starting, Ben laid out and got a good look at the window. Panting with rage, he pulled out his gun and got up. Shaking, Sarah pulled herself into a sitting position, so lightheaded that she nearly toppled over. Ben went to the window and listened. Then he walked to the stairs. A flash of movement caught Sarah's eye. She turned to the window, just as someone smashed through it feet first like a baseball player sliding home. Ben jumped and whipped around just as a man stood straight. He was tall. Sarah saw, and ancient, his face wrinkled and weazed. He wore fur pelts, boots, and what looked like a deer skull on the top of his head like a hat. Ben raised the gun and fired. The old man jerked left, right, but didn't go down. Sarah blinked. She was dead, she thought hysterically. She was dead, and Ben was too. The cop got him. Now they were in some strange, surreal afterlife. Maybe even hell. When the gun was empty, the old man rushed forward with inhuman speed and snatched Ben up by the neck. He lifted him off his feet and held him there, suspending above the floor. Ben thrashed and fought so much like Sarah had done, kicking his feet and gurgling as he died. Then he fell still, and the man dropped him. Then he turned to Sarah, who let out a small scream. But his face was warm and happy. He came to her the way a man would to a skittish cat, slow and careful. Sarah watched him, still unsure. When he was close, he knelt down beside her and with a flick of the wrist, moved the zip tie from around her feet. She had tried herself but couldn't, not with her hands in the condition they were.
Done,
the old man smiled at her, and simply faded away. When the search party found her 6 hours later, Sarah Martin was unconscious. She had woke 2 days later. She remembered nothing. But in the years to come, every time she set foot in the mountains around her hometown, she felt protected.